It's an 87th Precinct bonus episode for the book See Them Die, which we discussed in our main podcast, which you would have listened to a week ago. I don't know when I'm going to release these. Something like that, anyway. A week has passed and we're still here with our books in front of us. And we'll do a quick review, because there's not much to say about the editions that Morgan and I have of this book.
Annoyingly, no. Because
it's the same one that we had when we did the Heckler last time.
Yeah, we're so boring.
It's just the Orion edition with the revised dedications in it. Uh-huh. So they're all dedicated to Hunter's wife, Dragica. I wish I knew how to pronounce it.
I feel like your second one there.
Dragica.
It seems right to me. Yeah. I don't know.
Well, I hope so. Whereas Steve-O has... What have you got, Steve-O?
I've got the Pan from 78.
What's the cover of your...
1983rd printing.
All right. Good vintage.
Yeah, the... Well, the thing that I mentioned about that we'd not discussed, really, was the title, actually, which I always think is forgotten. See Them Die.
Yes.
It's quite dramatic. But yeah, there's some fairly cool-looking guy on the front with shades looking a bit kind of...
Do you think he's supposed to be mysterious? Pepe Miranda? Or is he a gang member, or...?
I don't know, it's hard to know.
I don't know, it could be...
Or is it someone watching the scene unfold?
It could be...
It's a sunny day, so you probably put
it... It could even be Frankie, that, though, I would... Maybe.
Let's have a look here, let's see. It could be.
Yeah.
I mean...
He just looks
a
bit...
There is a sort of reflection of buildings in his...
He looks like he means business, anyway, you know.
He does. He's not young, anyway, so he's not one of the...
But he's not old.
Cover photography by Colin Thomas.
So anyway, some stern-looking man of action.
But yeah, the title, See Them Die, as you mentioned there.
Yes, kind of.
Well, like I say, the original short story was called See Him Die. And it was about the gang members watching the scene unfold where a guy is shot. In here it's See Them Die, which is because we have more than one death in this story, unlike the short story.
Mm.
And the comedy character... Frederick Block, the big fat man.
Oh, does he say?
He says, "I want to see." I want to see him die.
Ah.
So that's quite an interesting thing. Yeah. That's where the title comes from. Anyway, I'm looking forward to getting the short story collection, "Learning to Kill." Huh. I think that'll be very interesting in terms of his development and.
Absolutely,
yeah. Can I say something totally irrelevant to the books whatsoever?
Of course you can.
But it's occurred to me at the beginning that the Hark.
Yeah.
87 Precinct. Every now and then it reminds me of Fred Dinage, is it? In How.
From the.
That's why sometimes. Do you notice sometimes I raise my hand and it's
when I say
of that? Because he used to say How, didn't he?
How. That's How for now.
Yeah.
He used to sign off with that.
So that's Hark for now. Perhaps that could be a...
Well, talking about this weird British ephemera that we seem to lapse into...
We do.
It's our duty, surely.
So we've added another...
American books, but
this is our perspective. Unfortunately, our perspective is bound into such things as Coronation Street, as we mentioned in the main podcast.
Kenneth Connor.
And the cast of the Carry On films, of which we should talk about again in a second.
They do.
And now we've introduced How, which was basically a sort of magazine programme for kids, wasn't it?
Like,
about how to do things.
It was almost a sort of like vaguely scientific magazine. Mm. So it was almost like a little bit educational, but still
quite good.
Edutainment.
Edutainment. That's
how
a horrible word.
Send your hamster to the moon or something. You could build a rocket for it.
Yeah.
There'd be a little panel. How do you send your hamster to the moon?
I don't know,
Fred. Well, I imagine you're going to show us.
How? Oh, God. I just thought of something really funny. How to make a papier-mâché Inspector Morse. That'd be amazing, wouldn't
it? I think
it?
I missed that episode, but...
You need loads of chicken wire.
One of the most popular programmes on TV at the moment is Inspector Morse. We're going to show you how to make a papier-mâché version of him.
Yeah.
And if you've got time, you can do Lewis too.
Well, how are you going to do that, Gaztop? Well...
I believe How was around for quite a long time.
Yeah.
There's an early version.
Like there's a 70s version, and then I think...
Fred was
the original cast member, wasn't he? And then
right, it's always
Gaz Top and Carol Vorderman.
That's right. Yeah.
I remember one where they were showing you how to quickly change a duvet cover, and I use that technique to this day.
Wow.
Presumably, they had parents writing in saying, "How can you encourage my children to make their own beds.
If only I'd seen that. It's a constant source of pain and frustration.
So that times the fire brigade have had to cut you out of a duvet cover.
That's amazing. Anyway.
I did ask on Twitter if any of our followers from abroad really knew what the Carry On films were, because we keep talking about the Carry On films.
We really do.
I don't know why, because they're almost universally awful.
It's a tricky one, and I don't know if we want to actually give specific details. Save to say, if you want to find out who Kenneth Connor is, yeah, or Kenneth Williams, or any of the others, Hattie Jakes, Joan Sim,
perhaps we subconsciously mention them because there's a massive amount of them, and they've all got the same characters in them. Well, same individuals in playing different characters.
It's sort of running concurrently with the 87 Precinct novels.
So yes.
So yeah, 1960 Carry On Constable. That was our equivalent of the 87th Precinct.
That's the closest we could come.
And in fact, I'll tell you this, if you want another tenuous link, we did have the tenuous link of Kenneth Williams being on an episode of Wogan with Evan Hunter in the 80s, which we talked about episodes ago. The other day when I was in London, I went to a very good bookshop called Scoob Books.
Ooh.
And just over the road from that bookshop where I bought two Ed McBain books, standalone ones, is where Kenneth Williams used to live. So it seems that our talking about Ed McBain is fated to be tied into this lightweight comedy series of films from the 1960s and 70s. So sorry about that, everyone.
What we should try, actually, move away from Carry On films, is see whether there's more similar to the Hammer Horror films and their cast.
Michael Ripper,
yeah.
These are great actors.
Yes, I think he was in some police procedural.
I think he was probably in quite a lot of police TV stuff.
So let's that'd be something to...
Talking Pictures.
Yeah, flag up.
What we haven't done, Steve-O, is you haven't huffed your book to give us a sense of the smell. You say it's a 1980s edition. This is probably where you got your cough.
Reasonably
from.
Odourless. I don't know whether it smells.
I have no sense of smell at the best of times.
Reasonably odourless, that.
Yeah, there's a little bit of a depth of scent as you get towards the spine. Once you get your hooter right in there.
Well, I don't know whether it's my slight cold I've got. But
like the rubbish versions.
That's not going to be fragrant at all.
No.
Disappointingly.
Okay. Oh, I'll tell you what. Like, here we go. Let's get back to Ed McBain. And what I've done is I've printed out...
That's probably a good idea.
Sorry, everyone. This was part of my research to See Them Die, and one of the things in the New York Times that came up was from 1962, and it was a list of classified ads for a company selling books cheap. And so I've printed it out, and I thought you guys might like to have a little look through. It's had to go over several pages because it's a big, long, thin advert. See if there's any books on this printout that you'd be interested in. I'll pass you a couple of pages each. There's another one for you there, Steve-O. So there's a couple of McBain's on this list, which is why it cropped up. So see if there's any titles on here that grab you.
Let's have a look.
Cooking the Chinese Way by N. Frowned.
Frowned?
F-R-O-U-D.
That's an interesting name.
Mm.
I've got a couple of favourites on this list. I'm quite keen on The Days of the Harpsichord.
Nice. The Days of the... Yeah. Furniture in Your Home by G. Thomas. A survey of the changes in domestic furniture. Photos and drawings.
I wonder why these are in the sort of sale.
There's some corkers here. The Men from the Boys by Perrin Stryker.
Ooh.
A fictionalised examination of the subtle differences that distinguish ordinary managers from executives.
Seems very thrusting.
Well, yeah. Actually, after the title and the guy's name, I was expecting it to be loads more exciting. It's actually incredibly dull from the description.
There's one on here called 8 American Locomotives.
Ooh.
That sounds like it's just some pictures of locomotives.
Well, this has got
8 of them.
8 of them. Well, no more, no less.
Atlas of Men, I think you'll find, has got 1,175 photographs in the nude.
What?
Ooh.
It's a guide. What the hell does that say, Morgan? A guide on what?
Somatotyping? What?
Somatotyping? Is that body types?
The problems of human physique.
Somatic, it relates to the body.
1,175 photographs in the nude of 88 known types with age, height, weight standard, etc.
This seems like a flimsy excuse for a book full of nudies.
It certainly
does. A handbook for physicians, psychologists.
Handbook.
Yeah. Yep. there's a euphemism.
Physical educators, actuaries, and nutritionists, human biologists, published at, that must be the publisher's prize, $10 only, $3.95.
Yeah. No such euphemisms required for modern sex techniques by R Street.
Yeah.
Well, look at this. Instead of paperback, limp cover.
Limp cover? It's even worse.
Limp cover. It says that on quite a few. It's like your...
You can roll them up.
It's like
the opposite of a permaback.
Yes, yeah.
I'm glad to say that modern sex techniques doesn't have a limp cover.
No, it'd be a bit of a...
Oh, my God. Right, well, it's funny this book should be on here because this was an episode of In Our Time last week.
Oh, right, with our...
With me, friend. Melvin Bragg, tonight is the history of the self-winding watch, 1770 to 1931.
That's definitely an episode of In Our Time.
This handsome volume by Alfred Chaptas and Eugene Jacquet details the complete development of every mechanism that contributed to the self-winding watch over 150 something. I read that. Many tipton. Over what? 150 what? Many tipton. Indices, 8.5 inches by 11 inches. Big old book, that, $9.95 special price.
Bargain.
And if you wanted an Ed McBain, you could get The Heckler and Give the Boys a Great Big Hand or See Them Die in the $2 for $1.
Crikey.
Deal by 1962.
Let's have a bit of a swap, shall we, Morgan? See if there's spot any.
I give these out not only as light relief for our humorous bonus episode, awesome. But also because it's just interesting to see the sorts of things that were around at the time as well. I mean, this is a weird list. This is like going into one of those badly organized
some great,
shops.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Oh, look, this book sounds brilliant. It should never have happened.
I was enjoying that.
That sounds
that
amazing. That you'd be.
What, a book about some fires that happened.
Yeah, an informative and frightening account of headline-making fires around the world. Disasters that happened in fireproof hotels. Ships surrounded by water. Isn't that every ship?
Well, everyone, people like a good disaster, don't they? So.
Nightclubs and other safe places. I don't know, fireproof hotel, which is more dangerous... A fireproof hotel, a ship surrounded by water, or a nightclub.
I can spot risks in all of those areas.
Yeah.
Modern Sex Techniques R. Street. A frank discussion of sexual practices presented detailed instructions for achieving mutual satisfaction and offering straightforward information on basic principles.
Always good to have straightforward information on basic principles.
Illustrations.
Excellent.
Nice.
Sounds pretty good. If we could get away from the dirty books on offer here for
a second.
You see,
you should never have given this me. It sounds...
Well, you can order them if you want. I don't know if they're still there in 1962.
I'd imagine my $2.98 would still secure me the Days of the Harpsichord if I so desired.
You'd hope so.
Paint the Wind. That sounds quite good.
Sounds frustrating.
The remarkable watercolours of Beatty and Yaz.
Well, there you're just go. Making up. These
I'm
are,
not.
These are Star Wars names.
Well, there we go.
I was thinking about, and I think I did drop this hint on our little group chat, because I was listening to very recently a podcast about board games and sort of craft gaming type stuff called 5x Games. Very interesting little reviews of games. There's a review of a thing called Pulp Detective, which sounds quite good. But it got me to thinking, there's no 87th Precinct board game. And if there was, what would you have? What would you have for a board game?
I did have a think about this, and I've kind of forgotten what most of my thoughts were, but... would you have a thing a bit like Scotland Yard, maybe? If anyone knows the board game Scotland Yard.
Well, this is what I'm thinking, because you've got Scotland Yard, Steve-O, haven't you? You've
That's like pursuing a criminal around a map of London using bus tickets. And basically, when you run out of underground passes,
you're scuppered.
You're scuppered.
In this day and age, would it have to be more involved? Like, maybe you have, like... a thing where each member of the game-playing party has to select a card. One of you is the deaf man.
Yeah, this is what I was thinking. Would the deaf man be like the main villain?
Surely. So the deaf man has to go away and read the scenario suggested by the card. And then the other people would be random members of the squad, depending on which card they'd picked, and they all have different attributes and different weaknesses.
Well, you could all be a detective, and you've got to move around the board trying to get promoted from third grade to second grade and first grade. But given that none of the characters ever do,
it's a totally impossible game
that is very frustrating.
You just had to play it for 50 years and you're in the same place as when you started.
Yeah, the only person, the only character is if you're lucky enough to be Birkling, you get to get promoted once.
In the first round. That's it.
But I could definitely see a game with like different scenarios, like loads of them, and one person being the death man and having to try and
go from A to B to execute his crime.
They've been given a scenario, and then
the others have got to suss out what the crime is.
Other game players have been given their characters, and according to their character, they have to try and act as best they can to stop it.
Yeah, that you could have really
like
good.
Like the heckler one, where you'd have to go to the shops to interview.
Even once you've gone through all the scenarios, you'd probably never end up playing with the exact same mix of detectives, so the way it would pan out would vary depending on how the person playing the Death Man chose to go about it and how...
Would you have a board that was laid out like the city?
Oh, yes.
Definitely. It's
a no-brainer.
Yeah. We could have a flip. You could have on one side the priest, slightly larger scale...
Yeah, of the city and the boroughs.
Yeah, and then on the other side, the precinct.
Oh. I think there's enough content in terms of the world that you could definitely do something interesting with it, and you could have like action. A lot of these games are driven by the random event cards that you occasionally have to draw.
Yeah,
akin to the Monopoly
Captain Frick as required.
Yeah. Or you've got cards that relate to, say, information from an informant. Drawing the Danny Gimp card out of the...
Fats Donner. Miss a turn. Well,
you get good information, but you have to spend a turn in a steam bath.
With a paedophile.
With a paedophile,
Emerge wrinkly and slightly disgusted, but with good info.
Useful intel. Yeah.
I think there's definite potential there. It's when you start thinking about the actual mechanisms of games that you like, though, particularly now that gaming is such a big thing and it's so considered on all the levels of artwork, design, functionality, stuff like that. When you start thinking about the mechanisms, goodness me, it makes your head hurt.
But the,
especially when you have to try and make them into a playable game in only a few steps.
If you're detectives, depending on who you picked out, they could have different attributes. If you were Hal Willis, you might have a high score for your...
judo skills.
Yeah, so you've got some special skill that comes from that.
A little bit like your card from Talisman that gives you your attributes.
That's it, exactly. Every individual character would have, like... some strength and some weaknesses, so depending on what situation they got in.
Exactly. So if you had somebody like Fat Ollie, his special skill could be going anywhere on the board that the others can't, due to the fact that he always turns up uninvited.
Oh, blimey. This is copyright us.
So anyway...
although I'd be quite glad if somebody did all the hard work and you saw it on the internet.
Yeah. They're available for consultation with people who actually know how games work.
But yeah, it could be good.
Yeah, we'll have to keep thinking about that. That could be make our fortune. I suspect people don't make fortunes off a lot of these craft games now.
Probably not.
Even though most of them sell for about 60 quid a pop.
They're outrageous, aren't they? Yeah.
Well, I think they have to sell for such a high price in order that the 10,000 units that they actually sell is actually paid for their manufacturing and distribution
and
give them a slight fee.
Definitely. Anyway, on a totally unrelated subject, I do feel I need to tell you guys this, and everyone, in that I was in our local Asda, which is a branch of Walmart. It's a grocery store. It's a big shop, and they have at certain times of day, they put out the cheap food that's about to expire.
I bought some cheap food from Asda today.
Well, perhaps you saw it. There was two tubs, which were about, let's say...
Of the ham!
Of the ham. Yeah. And it was just labelled. There was a label on these boxes of diced ham. And these boxes,
they were massive!
25 by 20 sort of across and about 15 centimetres deep. The label just said, waste ham.
Yeah. You just looked at it and thought,
Who's going to buy a box of waste ham?
The only if you were about to make like the world's biggest ham omelette, you know, like
or a pizza, a huge ham and mushroom pizza or something.
What, 20 of them? Yeah,
20,000.
I saw those. Two of them, wasn't there?
Two big boxes of waste ham.
Waste ham.
Well, what concerns me is I don't know what the thing is that they are the waste from. Have they swept them up off the floor, or have they been slicing up something else?
Wasted off the other ham.
Yeah, well, that's as simple as it is, really, isn't it? Goodness me.
You have two types of ham in this world, ham and waste ham.
I've been to Waste Ham, it's near Portsmouth.
It's near East Ham.
Oh, dear.
They play on Saturday.
Oh, good Lord. And that, I think, is as good a point to stop this bonus episode as
please,
any.
Please, please stop it.
If you have any tales of waste ham from your own particular burg or zone that you live in, then...
Do you like waste ham or West Ham?
West Ham?
Or West Ham?
West Ham. Oh, dear.
Good evening.
Do Melvin Bragg introducing a programme about waste ham.
Okay. today on In Our Time, we're discussing waste ham, its cultural development from the 16th century to its fall from grace in the interwar period.
So listen out for that on the BBC iPlayer, everyone.
Oh, yes.
We're going away to listen to it now. Good night, everyone.
Good night.
Good night.